Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson, our podcast. Be sure and check out our website. It's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. That's where you're going to get first look of everything that's going to be happening the coming week, as well as that's where we roll out the podcasts and our op-eds. And be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. On the line with me now is Dr. Jill Vecchio. She's a frequent guest both on the show and for the podcast. She is a public policy health expert. She is a radiologist by day and helps save women's lives through her analysis, her radiology on breast cancer. But she also is trying to save, I think, the American dream, because we need to understand what is happening from a policy standpoint. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me again, Kim.
So today we're going to talk about vaccines. In particular, we teased it a little bit this morning on the show. You've started to research the COVID-19 Wuhan virus vaccine, and you said you're uncovering some really interesting stuff, Dr. Jill Vecchio.
Interesting and kind of frightening in many ways. The difficulty has always been with vaccines for coronavirus and some of the RNA viruses, as opposed to DNA viruses, is that the RNA viruses mutate frequently, like the influenza. So that's why you have to have a different flu vaccine has to be developed every year based on whatever strain of influenza seems to be coming out of China and therefore kind of transmitting around the world. And a lot of times the vaccine that is developed doesn't work by the time the strain that started has mutated and it affects us, and the vaccine that's been developed against the original strain may or may not be effective against this, whatever mutation may have occurred by the time it gets here to the U.S. So that's a difficulty with RNA viruses and developing vaccines. Coronavirus has notoriously, because it's been around a long time, it's kind of a version of the common cold, coronavirus and adenovirus, which is another kind of cold virus. Those two, people have been trying to make vaccines against coronavirus for a long time, especially after the SARS-1 episode. This is SARS-2, the SARS-1 episode, and they weren't successful. Coronavirus apparently can have some bizarre late reaction and like a kind of a backfiring effect. I won't go into the medicine of it, but it can have a kind of a weird side effect that can be very severe. So that's why they've kind of really not had a coronavirus vaccine before. They just haven't been able to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really crazy that all of these countries, and I can go through some of the different, there are several different versions, several different countries working on vaccines and different companies working on vaccines. And they're all kind of at the same phase where they've just done maybe the very beginning clinical trials where they've tested the vaccine on less than 100 people. And all of them are saying, yeah, we're going to have it out by January 2021. And that in and of itself is frightening, period.
The fast track on it.
Especially when they're... Exactly, especially when they're talking about 100 million doses for the U.S. alone. Or so we're talking about potentially over a billion, with a B, over a billion people getting a version of one of these vaccines. All of them on a fast track. What happens if there is a similar problem to what has occurred already and been well documented many times with coronavirus vaccines? What happens if that happens to 20 or 30% of a billion people that get this vaccine?
So what is some of the weird stuff that happens with these past coronavirus vaccines?
There's a weird response that you get an initial immune response. So you develop antibodies, you get an immunity, but then when you're re-exposed to a similar enough virus, another coronavirus that's just a little bit different or the same coronavirus again, your body goes into this hyper-immune response and you end up actually dying of the disease it's far worse than it would have been if you'd never had the vaccine to begin with.
Okay. Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah. I mean, and it's been, I think there were at least two or three different episodes of that sort of thing happening, one in a bunch of children, and then in a series of adults. You know, so they've been working, and that's why coronavirus, and we're pretty sure it came from the lab in Wuhan, this version of it, right? Came from a lab in Wuhan. They were working on not just probably developing, either they developed this virus in the lab, or they found the virus and were working on a vaccine for it. So, you know,
now, I've heard the virus.
We haven't been able to make it work.
Now, this is hearsay. I heard that the virus had the properties that looked like it was man-made. Have you researched that out at all?
Yeah. Yes. I've seen several articles on it, and lots of documentation that from U.S. virologists being interviewed that have seen the genetic structure of this. And they say this had to be made in a lab, and they were pretty sure it was made in the lab in Wuhan, China. And these are high end. There are only like seven of these bioweapons labs. These are bioweapons. This is what they are dealing with every single day. There are seven of them around the world. I think we have one or two in the United States.
Okay.
And it's usually they're in the U.S. They're military-based operations, so yeah, obviously, you know, it's bioweapons.
Well, and
nobody gave up on this after World War One. They'd been working on bioweapons of mass destruction for forever.
Right, it
since
was
World
like
War One.
We're going to stop. Wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's important that people understand that. The National Health Institute here in America, Dr. Anthony Fauci, they have very close ties to this particular lab in Wuhan. I think it's important people realize that.
Yes. Also understand, though, in the context of it, the China, everybody seemed to think that China was going to be a good guy because they were becoming more capitalistic, mm-hmm. and that they were therefore going to become more democratic. So it was cool. It was cool to do stuff with China. It was okay. Plenty of U.S. companies did business in China, still do business in China. Some of them were moving out. But everybody thought that China was okay,
mm-hmm.
or that they were going to be okay if we collaborated with them and shared information and all this stuff. Well, in my opinion, China's been playing a game
yep.
the whole time, and we just fell into it. But you know, that, I think we kind of went into some of that at one of the other podcasts.
Mm-hmm, we did.
So I would recommend people go back and listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, let me go through, if this is okay. Let me go through some of the companies so people can keep straight how the vaccine race is organized at this moment.
Okay.
And I'll tell you about some of these companies. So in the U.S., Moderna, M-O-D-E-R-N-A.
Okay.
They deal with mRNA technology, like mRNA particles. And they're in Cambridge, but their CEO is French. So really they have a French history now in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Then Pfizer is working with a German vaccine company, and they're working on their own version. AstraZeneca is out of Oxford, so it's Britain. They're working on a vaccine. Russia just made their press release, right? They're calling it Sputnik V. They've only tested it on 76 people so far. 76 people.
Okay.
And apparently Putin occasionally acknowledges his children, and he claimed that one of his daughters got a test version of the vaccine. But
well, the Russians have a great history of taking good care of their children.
Exactly, exactly. Taking good care of their people in general, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Russia and China are both using kind of a similar approach to the vaccine, using another kind of cold virus as kind of a smuggler to get this little spike protein from the coronavirus into the cell. So they're all doing a little bit different variations of an approach to the vaccine. So the idea of a vaccine is you inject some identifiable portion of a virus particle into a human body. The human body's immune system will identify that particle and say, you don't belong here. I'm going to make an antibody to you and fight you to make sure that you can't cause any disease. Once your body has made an antibody, it has a little template in case that little bad guy, that little virus, shows up again later on, so that, oh, well, now we know how to make the antibody. We've already got this little template for it, so now all we have to do is just shove it into the factory and make a whole bunch of antibodies, fight the virus, and you'll never get sick from it again. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how these things work. The trick is figuring out which part of the viral particle will trigger the most effective and long-lasting immune response without making the person sick mm-hmm. from the virus. And some of them, you know, you tend to get like smallpox. We used to get those big scars on your arm, you know, from the smallpox vaccine. You know, sometimes people get sick, a little bit sick from the flu vaccine. The shingles vaccines are notorious for giving you muscle aches and pains and stuff like that. So there are really frequent side effects to the vaccines, depending on what kind of a viral particle they use and so forth. So this Moderna, the one in the U.S., is now, they're going to start their phase 3 clinical trials, which means they're going to start testing on tens of thousands of people. China is going to start testing theirs on tens of thousands. Russia is going to start testing theirs on a few thousand. These tens of thousands, 20,000 people in the next phase of these trials for vaccines are really located in all different countries. So I think it's AstraZeneca is testing theirs in South Africa, and there's some testing that's going to happen in Brazil and Mexico and all over the world, United Arab Emirates, stuff like that. So these companies are testing, they're doing these large clinical trials, not just in their own countries where the company's located, they're going to be doing it all over the world, which makes collecting the data and supervising everything that much more complicated.
Well, and to be consistent, I would think across right. the spectrum would be difficult.
Exactly. So it is going to be a test, and the question is, are they going to adhere? Is everything going to obey the same rules? Because every time there's, you know, the WHO does something, every country gets to pick how they're going to handle whatever the situation is, how they're going to report their results to make themselves look good or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Having some kind of a standard that's applied internationally to all of these companies, let's face it. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not. There's going to be some manipulation of data. There's always going to be something weird happening. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. But this company, Moderna, is a very different company. As yet, I haven't found that they have produced and released a single thing.
Yeah.
Now they're doing very basic preclinical trials, mouse and primate studies on a whole bunch of different potential vaccines for stuff from flu vaccine, RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, which is really hard on little kids
mm-hmm.
every winter, shingles and chickenpox vaccines, the COVID SARS-2. HIV, Zika virus, they're working on a bunch of things. Their approach to a vaccine is also completely different. Their approach is they get that little viral particle, they decide which viral particle they want to use to create the immune response. They synthesize, artificially make the RNA of that a copy of that viral particle. They inject that directly along with, and they, you know, have these, what they call adjuvants, like that alum and nanoemulsion stuff. They put different chemicals, lipoproteins, things like that. They attach to these little mRNA, these synthesized particles, to help with stimulating an immune response. That's okay. Different than other vaccines. So obviously, I'm probably getting a little thick into it, but the key is not only Moderna has not been around that long, they have never put anything on the market yet, anything. All of their existence has been in doing this basic research into whether or not even the concept of synthesized mRNA as an injectable that will create an immune response and can be used for a vaccine, they haven't even proved that works yet. And yet, we are Trump and, you know, Fauci's all over it, NIH, you know, Bill Gates Foundation, and Trump has ordered potentially 100 million doses. And a Canadian company, or the country of Canada, the Canada health system, is potentially going to be ordering, you know, millions of doses from Moderna.
It doesn't seem prudent. And the last thing you want to have would be like your, you know, them coming out and saying, oops, after, you know, you've had millions of people take this, or tens of thousands of people take this vaccine.
Exactly. I mean, the least, well, maybe least, considering what, if, okay, let's also say, we've said it before, but I think it needs to be said, this is SARS-2. COVID-19 is SARS-2. SARS-1 was in 2003. SARS-1 ran its course and died out within like a year, or I think it was a year, maybe a year and a half. It was gone, hasn't come back. The same thing could happen with this. Granted, it was a pandemic. Granted, it's been worse overall, more deaths and such, but it could go away, which would mean that we don't even need a vaccine.
Well, and you know,
it's all going to have to be risk versus benefit. But I am not encouraged by the track record of Moderna. They have no track record. They have none. I dated an engineer in college who did an internship in the summers at General Motors in Detroit. So he said after his first summer, he said, okay, note to self, never, ever buy a car the first year it comes out. First year that model comes out, don't ever buy it. Don't, like, never. And yet we're gonna give 100 million people a vaccine from a company that hasn't done anything before? We have no idea?
It doesn't sound like that's a very smart idea.
No. Sounds frightening to me. Now, in looking at the kind of a business history of Moderna, a whole lot of people have made a boatload of money just on trading stock with this company.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, it's kind of like there was a comment made in an article. Where did I have this? Is Moderna really just, is it a real company, or is it just a way for these people to be making money? Is it just a vehicle for investing?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to wonder. There's been some criticism of them about being very secretive with their releasing their data. They don't have peer-reviewed. They haven't published much, if any, peer-reviewed research, where peer-reviewed means you do the research. So you do your research like any pharmaceutical company would do. You release the research, and then you have other academics and experts review how you did that study, make sure it was done properly, make sure that your conclusions are appropriate, your statistical analysis is appropriate, and that you obeyed all the rules, and that, you know, yeah, this is valid research. This is a good study. And granted, overall, we're getting less and less of that in medicine in general, because everything seems to be so politically driven.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, especially, you know, whoever funds the study gets whatever result they are paying for, right? But Moderna has been criticized for not having that peer review process and publishing the peer review process. So usually, like, you'll publish a study, and then at the end, they'll have some rebuttal where the peer review people will comment on the study and the results and stuff, so that you can read both the study and what other people said about the study.
Okay.
And that they're not doing that. And that's a critical part of the scientific process. You have to allow yourself to be criticized and evaluated by other people. Otherwise, it's not valid research.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're just playing a game. And there's way too much game playing right these days anyway.
Well, and there's got to be big money in finding a COVID-19 Wuhan virus vaccine, because, I mean, we see it mm-hmm. trumpeted all over the media. But let's talk a little bit about the flu vaccine, because you have mentioned that that's not 100% effective.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and so my concern is that we might see a scenario where vaccine is developed for COVID-19 Wuhan virus, and then policy people come in and they start to mandate that people have to have that vaccine before they can, well, just insert the word vaccine for mask, before you can go to the restaurant, before you can go to church, before you can go to the grocery store. I'm a bit concerned. Hopefully that's not too tin-hatty, but I'm concerned that could be coming down the pike.
Oh, absolutely. Canada is actually having debates on that right now. Canada, who may be purchasing the Moderna vaccine, it depends on who's, you know, what the study results are and all that stuff. It's going to be January or so at the earliest before anybody has any kind of a vaccine, ready. I'm not going to be the first one in line for that, I can tell you that.
Me either.
But so Canada may be going with this Moderna if they have stuff available. They have a great weight, you know, they can crank out a lot of vaccine pretty quickly, as opposed to some of these other methods of creating a vaccine. Anyway, and Canada is debating that right now. Their health ministers are debating whether or not they should mandate a vaccine. And I can guarantee you that there are going to be states that will mandate a vaccine. And Colorado, right? You and I went to that anti-required vaccine rally,
right,
down at the Capitol a few months ago. So we know that there are plenty of legislators in Colorado who would mandate a vaccine.
That is why this election is so important because
based on my research, folks, everybody listen, the bottom line there is, based on past experience with coronavirus vaccines, as well as based on the rapidity with which they are shoving results through with all kinds of different approaches to the vaccine, none of which have ever worked in the past, some with very bad results. Wow. And now we can have hundreds of millions of people potentially put at risk by some kind of authoritarian government entity, even in the United States, that may choose to force us to have a vaccine, or your kids can't go to school, or you can't work in the hospital, or whatever. You're not allowed to travel on this plane.
Exactly.
I mean, this is potentially unbelievable. And to me, this is absolutely frightening, what I'm seeing here.
So Dr. Mark Siegel was on Tucker Carlson recently, and he said that little kids going to school, if they have not gotten a COVID-19 Wuhan virus vaccine, they may have to wear a little yellow pin that says, "No hugs, please." I mean, does your mind go to someplace else where they used the color yellow and forced people to do stuff?
The Jewish stars.
Yeah.
Right?
I know.
Yep.
So we need to be very cautious of this and also follow the money.
And I want to know how much money Anthony Fauci has invested in Moderna.
Oh, that's a good one.
I really do. You know, and I want to see him get the first vaccine. I want to see him get the shot. Don't ask, because Trump will not require that we have this vaccine. He will not. He has said that. He will not. He tends to agree with you and I about be very careful with vaccines.
And informed consent.
Informed consent.
Yes.
Okay, now the other thing is that nobody's talking about. Now, so we've got, okay, on the CDC website, this is August 13th, 2020. 5 million plus, 5.5 million cases, right? Quote, but it's really positive test results. 5.5 million positive test results so far. Now we have, and that's increasing by 53,000 as of the last day. So let's extrapolate that out to January. We'd probably have close to 11 or 12 million people at least that would have already been exposed to coronavirus in the United States. 12 million people that would then already have an antibody. Now, if we have kids go back to school, college kids go back to school, now you're talking herd immunity. Now you're talking a whole lot of the population that would have antibodies to this virus already before a vaccine could ever be available. Why bother?
Then follow the money. As you
right.
mentioned in
exactly.
one of our recent shows, the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobbying effort in America. And so, you know, you and I both realize as government gets bigger and bigger, big business likes big government, because big business then can influence big government to put in policies that will stamp out the innovation and creativity of smaller companies that could compete with them. And so Big Pharma, just think about it, create a product and then say, have government say everybody has to get it. And somebody's right. going to pay for that. Now, they may have a free vaccine. I find it so interesting when it's a free flu vaccine. I find that it's like, who's paying for that? Because
yeah.
they're not working for free. We know they're not working for free. So who's paying for that? Well, on the other hand, they'll probably go to the taxpayer and say, oh, my gosh, this is a public health crisis. We need to you know, pay for this from your hard work. And so who makes all the money on that? Big Pharma, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and whoever's invested in them.
So
right. now, the other obvious point is we act like, oh, this whole pandemic is unprecedented. But look at kind of how relatively easily it came about. And there have been previous versions, MERS, SARS, Zika, Ebola, all these other animal-to-human transmission viruses that became minor pandemics. This was a major pandemic that was made much worse because of political agendas.
Mm-hmm.
How many more? This isn't going to be the last one. What if we had another one in a year?
Well, depending on how the
yeah,
depending
yeah,
depending on how the election goes,
from happening.
Depending on how the election goes, very possibly this will die out on November 4th.
or depending on who gets in office, if they choose to create an environment whereby they can exponentially increase their power and control. Then what better than a pandemic, right? What have we seen?
Well,
the left has absolutely gone wild with taking advantage of every potential crisis, every situation, and they've just gone bonkers with
and you know who loses?
Political agenda and increasing their control. So I'm not sure that even if they were in power, that they wouldn't stop
well,
that
true that
MO.
True that. This is not the Democrat Party of JFK or Harry Truman.
This is like Bolsheviks.
Yeah.
This is a Bolshevik revolution is what they're trying to
do. And so what it is then it's the haves and the have-nots. And the great thing about the American idea is that big middle class, they're entrepreneurs, they're working 60, 70 hours a week to make their American dream. And guess who's gotten really hurt during this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption? It has been the middle class. This Democrat Party, this agenda of this Democrat Party is to take out the middle class. They want to have the elites and everybody else. And that's why this is so important that we understand this. But Jill, you look at the COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, and why was it like the big box stores were essential, but Main Street, they would pick winners and losers on it? We really need to ask those questions. And so those kind of, that agenda, they will bring that to other policy things, decisions as well. You know, like this forced mandatory vaccine that might be coming down the pike.
Exactly. Right.
Okay. So more to talk about this, or should we go to final thought on this, Dr. Jill Vecchio?
I think we can go to final thought, because I can tell you, every time I start to research this stuff, the information is there on the official websites.
Mm.
What I find frightening and infuriating is that nobody knows about it. You have to like dig it up. And there's so much information out there right now. It's overwhelming. Unless you go to these dry websites, you won't know about this. Nobody's talking about this. And it kind of drives me crazy, because, you know, I'm not an immunologist. I'm not a virologist. Why aren't they saying something? Why aren't the people that are experts in this field, where's their voice?
Well, and it takes some guts sometimes, because a lot of them, you know, are depend on research grants for their livelihood. And so we need to have people that take a look at this, you know, this data. And so Dr. Jill Vecchio, the next best thing is to listen to you on my show when you're on the show, and listen to these podcasts, because you're doing the research. And you can rest assured that Dr. Jill Vecchio has done her research, and that this will help you get your brain around these issues so that you can talk with your friends and your family and your colleagues. So, Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much. I so appreciate all the work that you do.
You know, I just hope that folks will listen to your podcast. The one on healthcare reform ideas and this one, I think, are two of the most important ones that we've done. And folks need to share those. Go to your website and share the link with as many people as possible. Share these links. People need to hear about this stuff.
They really do. And so what you were referring to was your 10-point plan to fix healthcare. You explained how we got here and then the solutions. So Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim. Have a great day.
You too. And my friends, I wish each of you a great day, and God bless you, and God bless America.